Today, we encounter Jesus, or rather, he encounters us in a visage that we could say is violent. You know, the whip cracking above your head. What does that feel like? I would argue that it's prophetic, and that there's a difference between the two. That what the prophets did, I'm thinking of Jeremiah, Isaiah, Hosea, Amos, they all chose these extreme symbols, kind of like the crack of a whip, to get people's attention. Say, pay attention. Something important is happening here. We'll miss it if we don't. And Jesus is doing the same. He's drawing our attention to pay attention fully to what is our relationship with God. So when he comes into the temple, technically nothing is going wrong. This is a pilgrimage feast, the Passover. Sacrificial animals are killed by the thousands as prescribed in the law. They have to be prepared carefully for the sacrifice. People are traveling and they have to buy them. It had always been happening. Caiaphas the high priest moved it a little closer, kind of inside the precincts. So nothing's really wrong, but it's a great teaching moment because it's really chaotic and cluttered. And what Jesus comes in and does with kind of surgical precision and a loud noise is to say, this is a place of prayer. This is a place of encounter with God. And you are turning it into a marketplace. Something that it was never intended to do and draws us away from the only thing it's for. That is a question for every age, every religion, every organization. All organizations do this from time to time, to stop and say, okay, what's this thing for? What are we doing this for? What is our bigger goal? What is our purpose? Because there's plenty of things in all of our lives. Sometimes it's just the stuff of life, the normal stuff, that draws us off course. Because those things get bigger and bigger until pretty soon we can't see what it is that the thing is for. Or sometimes we pit them against each other. We could say, this is a house of prayer, and therefore nothing else can be here, and we're going to define it this way. And now we've created an opposition. Jesus is definitely doing something else. And I'm especially reading this through the lens of John, the community that's writing this. In a couple of chapters, we're going to encounter the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman at the well, John 4. We're in John 2 now. And Jesus will say, very provocatively, you worship God as you know God here on this mountain, Mount Gerizim, where the children of Israel came into the promised land. We Judeans worship God in Jerusalem. But the hour is coming, and now is, when those who worship God will worship in spirit and truth. I don't know what he was doing. If that was the end of religion, or if that was just the end of missing the point, where it's been clarified that this is religion's purpose, that whatever else is going on, it's got to point to this. It's got to have this as its center weight. I think, again, in John's storytelling, there's something even more going on, and it's even in the story where Jesus is saying, if you're thinking I'm talking about the temple, this, because they said, 56 years this has been being built, you think you're going to tear it down and build it back? And he said, no, I'm talking about 3 days. You destroy the temple in 3 days, I'll bring it back. Which is, of course, a metaphor for his own life, indestructible life, as this community's telling it. But this community of John is a very clear message. They're saying, if Jesus is raised, then we are raised. We are already living in resurrection time. Yes, we're going to die, but there is something about life, an abundance of life, that brings it all now. brings all of eternity into this moment. So, as we tap into that, whenever we do that, suddenly everything just gets bigger, and we have access to all of it. We drop kind of into God. So that if you come to the temple and find God here, that is the point of that, is so we can start to see God everywhere. Every face, every bush, every event, every creature, everything. So the heart is the temple of God. That's the big insight Isaiah has when the temple is destroyed. Where is God? Oh, right here. The world is the temple of God. So Jesus is taking us to the foundation. It is the same foundation as we find in the Ten Commandments, the core covenant from this morning. No other gods before me. That was the core of the commands. Two are about God's relationship, our relationship with God, and the other eight are about our relationship with each other. But that grounds it. God alone. And again, I don't hear an opposition. It is almost like kind of an invitation to see, how is God present in everything? How is God the way we read the world? How is everything a path to God? It's also clear to me in this text what Jesus is doing and what John and his community is telling, is that this mission can't be stopped. If it is rooted in God, then it's unstoppable. We are part of an unfolding of something in time and out of time that is far bigger than anything we can imagine it is. So we're tapping into something that is limitless. That's a lot. That's a lot to take in. And it's a lot, you know, like, what does that mean on a Sunday morning? What does that look like? Because we got a lot of stuff. Even in COVID time, there's a lot going on a Sunday morning. And it's easy, not just Sunday morning, but every step of our lives, to, again, kind of clutter it up. What is it that we think we're doing? How does this lead us? How does everything we do lead us deeper into God? And then there's these times. We're still in it. We're going through one right now where the fire of God, the wind of God just comes blazing through, blowing through, and things get knocked over and burned up and all confused, cleaned out. And what do? We sit together in the aftermath saying, what just happened to us? And even more importantly, what does it mean? What can we let go of? What do we need to try out? What do we need to try on? Those are all really deep questions. And they can really reground us. When I was in high school, we came home from church one Sunday and found that our house had burned down. And, you know, came home to fire trucks. The core of it was just gone. And I will never forget the kind of shock, is the disbelief. You can see it, but you can't see it. Like, that's not real. That house, that's not there. But my mom said, as we stood on this soggy and black front lawn, she said, you know, we have God, and we have each other, and that's all we need. That had changed my life. It's still, I haven't told that story in a long time, but it's still just like it happened right now. That's how powerful it can be. That's how destruction or disturbance or clearing things out can reground, reorient, re-center our lives. doesn't have to just be destructive. It creates a huge amount of energy. Bishop Michael Curry, in this book that we've been reading through Lent in our book group online, saying in our reading last week that it is at the midnight hour. It's called that time when it's the darkest, when things could go either way. That is the time when the dreamers come out and dream big dreams. He was referring to Nelson Mandela, and this is, he's quoting Archbishop Tutu, who said that this is when we dream the dream of God, because God has a dream. You know, this what is the dream of God? This dream of a world made whole, a world flourishing, a world unfolding. And we have a part in it. It happens through us. So how do we dream at midnight of what is still far away at the dawn, but is a whole world and a whole new world? The world is changing, not just for St. Paul's or just for us personally. I mean, it is shifting and changing. One of those points where everything, you know, kind of just slips. It's like an avalanche. It's not ending. It's something's being reborn as well as falling away. And there's a dream of God in all of this. To quote again Bishop Tutu and Bernard Dozier and others, what is that new possibility that is taking root? And how do we dream along with it? I hadn't noticed this, but I was listening at NPR this morning. Today's the 56th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, of that walk across the bridge and how it ended and how it began again. You know, that bridge was recrossed and they walked all the way to Montgomery. And our lives are built on that and a million other actions. And it still goes on. How big were those dreams? Even at a time when, in some ways, they could never be fulfilled. Well, sometimes dreaming for another time, beyond the scope of our lives. On Tuesday, we are going to start two intensive weeks of meeting. It won't be intensive for y'all. It's intensive for those of us who are going to all the meetings, but you only need to go to one, where we're going to talk about how we sustain our mission, St. Paul's, through giving, which is about dreaming. It is about how we imagine and reimagine our life together. We're looking for everybody to participate, or at least 90%, so please sign up today. Marcia might be dropping the link into your chat right now even. But during these couple of weeks, I invite you to put this question, superimpose this question above everything else that we talk about, which is, what's it for? What is the temple for? What is our life together for? What is God calling us to do and be in the world as a beacon, as a hope, as a catalyst, as a place of action, as a place of prayer? I'm not really talking about program. I'm talking about presence. How do we be the presence of God? How do we let that flow through us? How do we channel it? And of course, we start with your own oxygen mask. Start here. Start now. It's one of the reasons that meditation, and I don't mean a certain type of meditation, but anything that helps us to quiet the cacophony of the mind, of all the, 60 million things that come in whenever we are centering. It's not about quieting the mind, I should say, it's about returning to that place, returning. Just strengthening that muscle. That is why it is so important and powerful. It cleans out the temple. It opens up the space again. Every time we come back to that, place of God's presence now, where we can hear. We fulfill the great commandment, no other gods, or God through and with and in everything. We worship in spirit and truth, God in everything, and we let the Spirit pray through us as we channel and become the presence of God. This might be the frontier, the new frontier of radical welcome. You know, how do we welcome not just everyone, but everything? Everything that has happened to us as a teacher, as something that leads us to know the temple in a new way, beyond the temple, or include the temple in a work that just keeps rippling out and out and out, so that God can draw us ever more deeply into this stream of life, this stream of becoming, and this dream of the thing we pray every day, your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as in heaven. That's good trouble, to quote John Lewis. And that's why we're here, to follow Jesus and make some good trouble in the world.